Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
County race on the line Tuesday. It's election runoff day Tuesday, and Odessa voters have only a couple of options on the ballot, but one will decide who represents Precinct 1 as county commissioner in Ector County. Mike Gardner is challenging incumbent Eddie Shelton for the seat after no one got 50.01% of the 2,890 votes in March during the primary election. The winner of this GOP runoff will be commissioner, as there is no Democrat in the race on Election Day in November. Former Odessa City Councilman Gardner embraced a family tradition with his bid for a four-year term as Precinct 1 commissioner on the Ector County Commissioner's Court, leading the three-man field in March, but falling into a runoff with Shelton, who ran second. Returns showed Gardner with 1,369 votes, or 47.4%, Shelton 966, or 33.4%, and Haas Duggar with 555, or 19.2%. Gardner seeks the seat of his late father, Freddie Gardner, who served for 17 years until his death in 2014. Shelton seeks a second term after his 2014 appointment and 2016 unopposed election. Precinct 1 is the county's biggest precinct, encompassing far northern and far western Odessa, along with a big chunk of the county to its far north central, northwestern, and western boundaries, and to near its southwestern boundary. Democrats on Tuesday in Ector County have only two races, that of Senator between Royce West and Mary M.J. Hager, and the runoff for Railroad Commissioner between Krista Castaneda and Roberto R. Alonzano. The following locations will be open 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday for voting. Crossroads Fellowship, Room 1135, 6901 Texas 191 Frontage. First Baptist Church, Discover Room, 709 North Lee. First Church of the Nazarene, Gymnasium, 2223 Lindale Drive. Kellis Turner Community Building, 2230 Sycamore. Kingston Avenue Baptist Church, Fellowship Hall, 5200 Kingston Avenue. Lutheran Church of the Risen Lord, Foyer, 1603 North Grandview. Murray Fly Elementary, Foyer, 11688 West Westview Drive. Odessa College Sports Center, Foyer, 201 West University. Odessa Christian Faith Center, 180 Youth Building, Sanctuary, 8828 Andrews Highway. Powell Center, 1015 North County Road West. Salinas Community Building, 600 West Clements. Sherwood Community Building, 4819 North Everglade. Slater Community Building, 1001 West 38th. St. Elizabeth's Catholic Church, Gymnasium, 7601 North Grandview. Visit tinyurl.com/y73lmxml. After school care. This fall, Campfire West Texas will be offering a state-licensed school care for students on 10 Odessa campuses: Austin, Burnett, Gonzales, Knoll, Pease, Bice, Cameron, Ross, Burleson, and Jordan Elementary Schools. Children must attend the school offering the Kids Care Program, to be eligible. Registration will begin at 9 a.m. Monday and will continue until all spots are filled. The after-school programs are operated by Campfire West Texas, and components of the program include homework help, games, arts and craft, outdoor recreation, and traditional campfire activities and projects. The program will be offered from the time school is out through 6 p.m. Enrollment will be limited with a child-to-adult ratio of no more than 15 to 1 to provide attention and quality supervision. To register for Kids Care, complete an online registration form and pay a $20 annual fee for each child enrolled. A weekly $50 fee will be charged per child, and financial assistance is available for those who qualify. Online registration forms are only available at www.campfirewtx.org. For more information, call Campfire West Texas at 570-4144. Obituaries and death notices for Sunday, July 12th. Thelma Arlene Burkhalter. Thelma Arlene Burkhalter of Lubbock passed away Friday, July 3rd at the age of 76. She was born in Hobbs, New Mexico, July 5th, 1943. Arlene is survived by her daughter, Kay Malden, and husband, Max, of Odessa, son, Randy Burkhalter of Lubbock, six grandchildren, six great-grandchildren, and three great-great-grandchildren. She is also survived by two sisters, Nita Lee and husband Roy of Odessa, and Virginia Shelton and husband Wayne of Newcastle, Colorado, and many other family members. There will be no funeral services, but a memorial service for Arlene will be planned at a later date for friends and family to share their many memories of Arlene's life. Mabel Consuelo Reyes Solis, Waco. Mrs. Mabel Consuelo Solis of Brownwood, 89, a resident of Hewitt, passed away July 6th of natural causes. She is preceded in death by her husband of 36 years, Raul R. Solis, a Baptist minister. She is also preceded in death by her son, Joshua Solis of Waco, and a grandson. She is survived by her brother, Belisario Reyes of Fort Worth, her sons, Raul Solis Jr. of Sunset Valley, Hiram Solis of Axtell, Robert Solis of Brownwood, her daughter, Teresa Solis of Euless, nine grandchildren, and 13 great-grandchildren. Services for Mrs. Solis are being arranged through the Pecan Grove Funeral Home in Waco. Visitation was held Sunday, July 12th, and a funeral service will be Monday, July 13th at 10 a.m. Burial services will take place at Greenleaf Cemetery in Brownwood on Monday at 3 p.m. In addition of or in lieu of flowers, for Mrs. Solis, we ask that donations be made in her name to the Hewitt Public Library and Habitat for Humanity. Online guestbook available at www.pecangrovefuneral.com. Arlene Lou Horn. Arlene L. Horn, 84, of Odessa, passed away July 7th. She was born November 26th, 1935, to the late Andres and Lucille Bachlig of Hilo, Hawaii. Arlene was preceded in death by her grandparents, Frank and Gloria Kamara of Hilo, Hawaii, her parents, Andres and Lucille Bachlig of Hilo, and a daughter, Dawn Arlene Horn of Odessa. She is survived by her children, Daryl, Joseph, deceased, Robin and wife Cecilia, both from Odessa, Angela from Midland, and Leilani Michelle from Dallas, three grandchildren and three great-grandchildren. She is also survived by her siblings, her sister Carol Bisson, brothers Andres Backlig Jr. and wife Rose Marie, and father Timothy Backlig, better known as her little baby brother Lionel. Cousins, nieces, nephews, and grandnieces and grandnephews. In lieu of flowers, please send donations to Disciples of Grace Church, Post Office Box 13381, Odessa 79768. Services by Frank W. Wilson Funeral Directors. Lori Bernice Dunn Whedon. Lori Dunn Whedon of Odessa passed away Saturday, July 4th at Medical Center Hospital. Funeral services will not be held in order to maintain the health and safety of family and friends during the ongoing pandemic. Friends can share memories, uplifting messages, and pictures to her obituary wall at www.sunsetodessa.com. A private family interment ceremony will be held Monday, July 13th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Lori Whedon was born in Borger to Roy Lee Dunn and Clessie Murrell Dunn, March 19th, 1960. She is preceded in death by her mother, Clessie Murrell Dunn. She is survived by her children, Lucas and Mindy Whedon of Round Rock, Landon and Kayla Whedon of Odessa, siblings Les and Leah Blaylock of Odessa, Roy Frank and Donna Dunn of Richardson, her father, Roy Lee Dunn of Odessa, a nephew and a niece, as well as many wonderful friends. In lieu of flowers or memorials, the family requests that donations be made to the Children's Miracle Network or the American Cancer Society in Lori's name. Death notices. Juanita Hernandez Banuelos. Juanita Hernandez Banuelos, 88, of Odessa, died Wednesday, July 8th. Mass will be celebrated at 2 p.m. Tuesday, July 14th at St. Anthony's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery in Rose Hill section. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Brenda Joyce Cato Hawkins. Brenda Joyce Cato Hawkins, 60, of Midland, died Saturday, June 27th. A memorial service is scheduled for 10 a.m. July 14th at American Heritage Funeral Home. Christine Virginia Pell. Christine Virginia Pell, 94, of Odessa, died Tuesday, July 7th. No services have been scheduled. Arrangements are by Hubbard Kelly Funeral Home of Odessa. Felix Rivera Sr. Felix Rivera Sr., 87, of Alpine, died Thursday, July 9th in Odessa. A graveside service is scheduled for 11 a.m. Wednesday, July 15th at St. Joseph Cemetery in Fort Davis. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Hortensia C. Sanchez. Hortensia C. Sanchez, 93, died Thursday, July 9th in Odessa. Services are pending with Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Patricia Ann Pat Walters. Patricia Ann Pat Walters, 77, of Odessa, died Friday, July 10th. Memorial service is scheduled for 11 a.m. Tuesday, July 14th at Acres West Funeral Chapel.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Monday, July 13th, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, Turbine Turmoil. Wind farms threaten unspoiled river. Turbines could also interfere with U.S. Air Force pilot training. By John McCormick, San Antonio Express News. Comstock. Exactly how the Devil's River got its forbidding name is lost to history, but there is little doubt the harsh terrain and fierce natives who once reigned here played a role. It is far from any habitation, in a barren waste surrounded by hostile Comanches, but it is a beautiful place, noted one early visitor. A century and a half later, the natural beauty remains, and the rushing spring-fed Devils owns the reputation as the last unspoiled river in Texas. Its milky green currents slide through a wilderness unmarred by settlements or commerce. The only disturbance is the occasional blast of a low-flying Air Force training jet. But all is not well here. A plan by a billionaire Chinese industrialist named Sun Wanjing to build a huge wind farm is causing seismic upset among longtime landowners. It's a total crisis. We depend on ecotourism. The turbines will affect the deer, they kill birds, and we're on the flyway for the monarch butterflies, said Alice Ballstrunk, 63, whose great-grandfather, Claude Hudspeth, began acquiring the ranch in 1905. The project, by Sun's GH America Energy, also threatens to disrupt critical pilot training missions at Laughlin Air Force Base in nearby Del Rio. Last month, the obscure West Texas Energy Project was thrust into the national spotlight when a right-wing news commentator denounced it as a threat to national security. Since 2015, Sun, who made much of his wealth in Chinese real estate and energy, has purchased about 140,000 acres in the backcountry northwest of Del Rio. It is unclear how many turbines Sun could potentially build there. He is already moving forward with the first phase, called the Blue Hills Wind Farm, a 51-turbine project on one northern holding. His company is also exploring using some of the land for solar power projects. Sun declined to respond to a list of questions sent to his representative in Texas. 700-foot turbines. This is a timeless place of growling mountain lions, dark night skies, and Indian pictographs in hidden caves. Once sprinkled with sheep and goats, many of the large family ranches now are used only for hunting or have been acquired by real estate speculators. Vast protected areas also belong to Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, the Nature Conservancy, the Agricultural Land Trust, and private owners with conservation easements. In Texas, the Nature Conservancy is invested heavily in a lot of places, but nowhere more so than the Devil's River, said Jeff Francell, the Conservancy's Director of Land Protection. The main source of the pristine river surfaces is in a lush grove of pecan and sycamore trees on Strunk's ranch. What worries me is that the springs are on my place, and they own the next land over, about half a mile away. The danger is they will degrade the water, Strunk said. I just hate that they are going to industrialize right next door. The eye pollution, the lights, the noise. The prospect of a 700-foot-tall wind turbines sprouting on hilltops also worries officials at Laughlin, which trains 300 new pilots a year as one of three Air Force pilot training bases. Colonel Lee Gentile Jr., the base commander at Laughlin, declined to be interviewed. A critical hurdle for the wind farm is for its backers to reach an agreement with military authorities on a plan to mitigate interference with flights from the airbase. Former base commander Dave Belote, now a mitigation specialist hired by GH Energy America, said agreements for foreign-owned projects typically include many security safeguards. You have to give the Department of Defense access to the site and to the data stream anytime they ask for it. You also have to give the DOD prior notice of any foreign national who will be on the site, he said. Since the airbase pumps an estimated $2 billion a year into Valverde County's economy, elected officials are eyeing the proposed wind farm project with trepidation. My position, and probably the county's, is that if it affects Laughlin Air Force Base and hampers their ability to perform their missions, we're going to oppose it, said County Commissioner Bo Nettleton. I'm all for private property rights, but we have to protect the one thing that is the economic engine for Del Rio, he said. But because there are few legal or regulatory obstacles to such wind projects, even those built near a military base, there's little anyone can do if Sun decides to go forward. Unfortunately, counties don't have the authority to regulate wind farms, Nettleton said. So we're looking at legislation in the next session that would grant a county the authority on these types of projects that would have a direct effect on the military base's ability to perform its mission. The apex of Texas rivers. Carter Smith, executive director of the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, has spoken out against development in the area, about 200 miles west of San Antonio. The Lower Pecos and Devil's River country represent one of the last true bastions of wilderness in our state, he said, citing the department's long-term efforts to preserve the area. Proposals to further intensively develop the area surrounding the Devil's River run counter to many of the values that ranchers, conservationists, biologists, and outdoor enthusiasts alike have labored long and hard to protect, he said. In 1988, the state brought 20,000 acres on the Devil's River to create the Del Norte State Natural Area. In 2011, it added 18,000 acres to the south, which became the Dan A. Hughes State Natural Area. The Devil's River ends at the 50,000-acre Amistad National Recreation Area, a few miles west of Del Rio. TPWD aquatic biologist Chad Norris, whose specialty is springs, said the Devil represents the apex of rivers in Texas. Certainly the Como and San Marcos are wonderful rivers, but they are pretty developed, he said. If there is any place in Texas that deserves preservation, it's the undeveloped watershed of the Devil's River. One of the large ranches acquired by Sun in Valverde County, formerly called the Morningstar Ranch, is apparently being kept for his personal use. It has a high fence, a large hunting lodge, and jet runway, and he reportedly visits periodically. Members of the Devil's River Conservancy, a group created 10 years ago to protect the area, are in regular communication with Sun's representatives. We have talked to them about all kinds of alternatives. We've offered exit strategies. The one thing they have told us is if the economics are not there, they won't proceed, Conservancy President Randy Nunn said. But in that case, they might just sell it to another developer, and it might end up as ranchettes. We would still oppose the country being carved up, he said. Security vulnerabilities. West Texas is a windy place, and Texas ranks first in the country for both operating wind energy projects and those under construction, according to the American Wind Energy Association. The state has about 15,000 wind turbines spread among some 160 projects. Together, they generate around 30,000 megawatts of power, enough to power 7.7 million homes, according to the Trade Association. The current low price of natural gas, also used in power production, has cut into the profit margins of wind farms. Among the questions that appear unresolved about Sun's mega project is if it is economically feasible to build a wind farm in such a rugged and inaccessible area, one with few roads or transmission lines. It's also unclear if the available transmission lines operated by ERCOT, Energy Reliability Council of Texas, have the capacity to absorb any additional load. A former wind energy executive, Wayne Walker, 52, who with his brothers Philip and Caton own a ranch adjacent to the Blue Hills property, said time is running short for Sun's wind project to prove itself. If they don't get Department of Defense approval, or if ERCOT says there is not enough capacity, they go home. They won't build it. And both should be known by the end of the year, he said. Walker, who developed wind projects for Horizon Wind Energy in Houston, said there is another wild card in the deck. The worm in the tequila jar is the political part. You don't have to watch the news for more than 30 seconds to see that, he said. After a March visit to Del Rio, where he met with local officials and Air Force personnel, Senator Ted Cruz told the Del Rio Herald that the airbase is dealing with the distinct problem of a Chinese-owned company threatening to imperil training routes. Nothing that China is America's most significant long-term geopolitical rival, Cruz said. China has demonstrated a willingness to invest billions of dollars expanding its surveillance state. These Chinese towers, if constructed, pose a threat not only to air training, but also of potential security vulnerabilities, he said. U.S. Representative Will Hurd, who has been monitoring the proposed wind farm, said the issue is much broader than compromised air training routes. There is a question of foreign ownership of energy supply, and if you are a wind farmer, of trying to put it on the grid, he said. A U.S. company could not go to China and buy land anywhere near a Chinese military installation. So why are we allowing a well-known Chinese company, whose leader is well-entrenched in the Chinese Communist Party, to do that in the United States, he said. 50,000 hungry coyotes. For the scattered residents of the Devil's River area, the threats posed by a large wind farm are hardly abstractions. 3 years ago, a project with 69 turbines, each 500 feet tall, began operating on the eastern border of Valverde County. Owned by French and Middle Eastern entities, the so-called Rock Springs Valverde Wind Farm covers 15,000 acres along U.S. 277 and is within about 15 miles of the Devil's River. Some of the land belongs to Sun. Del Dickinson, 76, who lives in his grandparents' house on a ridge about 18 miles to the west, vividly recalls its launch. The first night they turned on these high-intensity, blood-red synchronized lights. I literally thought the Martians had landed, he said with a grimace. Since then, he has kept the blinds on the east side of his house permanently shut to avoid the turbine lights. Having lived out here, I'm one of those guys who loves to see forever, he said. If we're not careful, we'll see Valverde County turn into a huge pincushion with the wind towers being the pins, he said. Dickinson's 7,000-acre spread includes 4.5 miles of river frontage. Along the banks, he said, are caves and shelters that were inhabited by native people thousands of years ago. In his living room, he has a collection of various points and arrowheads gathered on his ranch, including several unique to the Devil's River area. What his ranch doesn't have these days is livestock. Instead, it has coyotes, bobcats, and foxes in abundance. We have a terrible problem with predators, he said, adding that last year, after not a single lamb survived, he moved his last 600 head of wool sheep to another property. The problem is that this used to be a ranching community where the ranchers supported each other to keep the predators in check. Now we're the only working ranch left in the area, he said. Things are only slightly better 15 miles to the north at the Hudspeth River Ranch, where Strunk still runs sheep and goats on 16,000 acres. We have about 2,000 sheep. We don't know how many goats we have because they are such escape artists, she said. Both are meat animals, and some of the lamb is served at restaurants in San Antonio, but predators also get their share. Eat more lamb. 50,000 coyotes can't be wrong, reads a bumper sticker on her truck. The herds are guarded in the rocky pastures by sheepdogs. She also has trappers at work, setting snares. Coyotes and bobcats, however, are a very minor worry compared to huge wind turbines. It drives me crazy, because it doesn't make any economic sense. They just want to prove they can be successful wind farmers in America, she said of the Chinese. A few miles south of her ranch, on a recent weekday morning, a group of 5 urban kayakers were about to launch a 4-day fishing trip. Their start was at Baker's Crossing, a site on Texas 163 named for a pioneering cattleman. It's just crystal clear, and there's a lot of bass in there. All catch and release, said Derek Schroyer, 34, of Austin. 2 years ago, he caught a 4.5-pound largemouth bass when he made the same float. It's one of the few rivers that everyone actually cares about. People take out whatever trash they bring in, he said. The prospect of large wind turbines twirling from nearby hilltops came as an unpleasant surprise. "I don't want to see that. That's the whole reason we come out here, to get away from all that," said Matt Hillis, 34, also of Austin. "They will take down a lot of trees, build roads all over the place, and bring in power lines." This article is entitled "OPEC to be Challenged by Taper Tantrum" by Grant Smith and Javier Blas from Bloomberg. Saudi oil minister Prince Abdulaziz bin Salman likes the idea of OPEC Plus acting as the central bank of oil, and he expresses admiration for Alan Greenspan, former chairman of the U.S. Federal Reserve. The challenge now confronting the Oil Producers Club is one that's all too familiar to the Fed. How to avoid a taper tantrum? The market panic that ensued when the institution proposed tightening monetary policy in 2013. Having successfully doubled crude prices over the past few months through unprecedented output cuts, the OPEC Plus alliance led by the Saudis and Russia is poised to begin unwinding these stimulus measures. As fuel demand recovers with the lifting of coronavirus lockdowns, the producers are about to open the taps a little. But as Greenspan's successors discovered several years ago, taking away the punch bowl carries its own risks. A second wave of the pandemic threatens another slump in oil consumption, while the billion-barrel mountain of inventories that piled up during the first outbreak still looms. If OPEC Plus increases supply just as the market falters, then prices could crash once again. When they look at prices over the quarter, when they look at green shoots of demand pickup, "I think they feel real good," said Halima Croft, head of commodity strategy at RBC Capital Markets LLC. "I do think they are cognizant, though, of some of the potential clouds on the horizon. It's a balancing act that Prince Abdulaziz and his counterparts must weigh on Wednesday when they hold an online meeting of the Joint Ministerial Monitoring Committee, the panel that reviews OPEC Plus's progress." Easing the cuts. The JMMC will consider whether the 23-nation alliance should keep 9.6 million barrels of daily output off the market for another month, or restore some supplies as originally planned, tapering the cutback to 7.7 million barrels. As the demand recovery gains traction, members are leaning toward the latter option, according to several national delegates who asked not to be identified. "Shipping schedules for August are already being set, so the course is more or less locked in," one said. In Russia, the most influential non-OPEC member of the alliance, major oil companies are preparing to increase production next month in the absence of other guidance from the energy ministry, according to two people from the industry who spoke on the condition of anonymity. Russian Energy Minister Alexander Novak said on July 2nd that no position on an extension had been taken yet, but stressed that it's better if OPEC Plus sticks to its previous decisions. "OPEC Plus can go ahead with the designated increase without inundating the market," said Bob McNally, founder of consultant Rapidan Energy Group and a former White House official. "Global demand will rebound by 18% this quarter to 95.7 million barrels a day as economic activity resumes," he predicts. "That will whittle away inventories at a brisk clip of 5.6 million barrels a day. Our balances show hefty deficits in the third and fourth quarters, even with the tapering," McNally said. "I think the market will handle it pretty well." Fragile market. Yet the strategy is not without risks. While oil prices have recovered to $43 a barrel in London from a two-decade low of $15.98 in late April, sentiment in the market remains fragile. The acceleration of the pandemic in the U.S., where infections hit a record last week, and its reemergence in Asia is casting a shadow over the outlook, the International Energy Agency warned in a report on Friday. The Paris-based agency advises major economies on energy policy. There's also still a price discount on prompt crude futures known as a contango. in the U.S. and Europe, suggesting wider market hasn't yet tightened. Crude inventories in the U.S. and China are near record levels, government and satellite data show. The kind of recovery that people would have expected by now has not materialized, said Mohammed Darwaza, an analyst at Medley Global Advisors. There's no doubt the consensus is we will get a tightening of the market. We're just not quite there yet. As a result, Riyadh is expected to insist that if output is restored, countries abide by their mandated limits, and that exporters who haven't yet made their share of the cutbacks atone for it. Falling in line. Iraq, Nigeria, Kazakhstan, and Angola are among laggards who have promised compensation cuts over the next few months to make up for cheating in May, which equate to about 420,000 barrels a day each month. That should offset some of the group's scheduled 2 million barrel surge, and the JMMC could impose further reparations for overproduction in June. How far the likes of Baghdad and Lagos, which have a poor track record of adhering to OPEC Plus agreements, go in their atonement is debatable. But Prince Abdulaziz has scored a victory in pressing them to deliver a surprisingly strong performance last month. He is unlikely to relax his vigilance when the producers gather on Wednesday. While relieved and satisfied so far, ministers realize they are not out of the woods yet, Rapidan's McNally said. Compliance is the number one priority. This article reads, UTPB Midland College will assist international students navigate regulations. Schools plan to have in-person, hybrid, and online classes, by J.C. Lewis. The University of Texas Permian Basin and Midland College will be offering in-person classes, online classes, and hybrid classes this fall semester because of the coronavirus pandemic. This will help them retain international students after the U.S. Immigration Customs Enforcement announced that foreign students who will be attending colleges that are entirely online this fall cannot remain in the U.S. for their studies. Becky Spurlock, UTPB Vice President of Students, said there are many regulations international students must follow to study in the U.S. One of those parts of the regulation that's been in place for quite some time is that when students come to the United States to study, they need to be in programs that are face-to-face or hybrid. That is to say, they can't be in exclusively online programs, she said. When most campuses went fully online in the spring because of the pandemic, it was a concern for many international students, but a temporary regulation was put in place to allow these students to remain in the U.S. as programs shifted to online learning, Spurlock said. The UTPB had been waiting to find out if the temporary regulation would continue, but it had been voided, she said. Here at UTPB, we will offer online classes, face-to-face classes, and hybrid classes, Spurlock said. For students taking face-to-face or hybrid classes, that would satisfy the requirement. Of course, the challenge moving forward is knowing that things could change again. Enrolled at UTPB are 84 students on F-1 visas, which is who the regulation would affect. The rule applies to holders of F-1 and M-1 non-immigrant visas. Those visas allow non-immigrant students to pursue academic and vocational coursework in the United States. There are about 120 international students who attend UTPB. Those students are here on a variety of visas. Spurlock said the university is anticipating between 35 and 50 additional international students will attend UTPB beginning this fall. She said her office heard from international students almost immediately after Monday's announcement. Spurlock said UTPB will be working with students individually as their needs arise for guidance with the new regulations. Over my 25-year career, I have found that international students at all the universities I've worked at to be exceptionally good students on our campuses, she said. They know it is a risk to come to the United States, and they spend a considerable amount of resources to do that. I have found, as a result, that they take it very seriously. They are good members of our communities. Midland College Executive Director of Institutional Advancement, Rebecca Bell, said in an email that the college will be assisting international students as much as possible during this time. While most of our fall classes will be online and hybrid, we will also have some face-to-face classes, she said. We are hoping that international students who want to live in Midland will be able to enroll in the hybrid and face-to-face classes. The Midland College Advising Department will be working with these students. Of course, international students who prefer to stay in their home countries will be able to take advantage of our numerous online courses. Spurlock said, UTPB is a school where students come because they know they will be making great personal connections, mentoring, coaching, and support. Our international students are wonderful contributors to our campus, she said. They are athletes, they are scholars, they are student leaders. They make a tremendous difference on our campus, and we're really glad they are here. This is the local page. This article is entitled, City Reports 20th Coronavirus Death, from Staff Reports. Midland County, the City of Midland, and Midland Health Department confirmed on Saturday the county's 20th COVID-19-related death. The patient, a man in his 70s, was being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital. He died on Saturday. He is the fifth Midland County resident to die this month from coronavirus, according to information from the city. A man in his 60s died on July 4th, a man in his 70s died on July 7th, and a woman in her 70s died on July 6th. They were all being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital. A Midland County man in his 50s died July 4th at a San Antonio hospital, according to the city. As of Friday afternoon, Midland County's overall confirmed case count is 1,104. There are 715 isolated coronavirus cases and 370 people have recovered, according to the city.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, July 13th. ECISD Live to focus on students' needs. Since March, when the novel coronavirus forced the shutdown of schools, Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray has hosted ECISD Live events on Facebook and recently YouTube to share information and take questions from the community. These events have included guests such as ECISD teachers, principals, students, and others. At 7 p.m. July 16th on the ECISD Facebook page and YouTube channel, Murray will welcome a national guest with Christopher Minich, Chief Executive Officer of Northwest Evaluation Association, NWEA. Before joining NWEA in January 2018, Minich held several leadership roles in the education industry. Most recently, he served as the Executive Director of the Council of Chief State School Officers. Their conversation will be about teaching, learning, children, and why the coming school year is critical for students to overcome the closures in the spring. It is an important discussion for our community to join. NWEA research shows some students may end up as much as a year behind in school because of the COVID-19 shutdowns. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Editor's note, Ector County has not updated COVID-19 cases since Friday afternoon. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 1,829. Ector County negative, 7,866 out of 10,633 tested, with 938 pending, 14 deaths. Recovered, 796. Active cases, 1,019. Midland County, 1,104 confirmed cases, 19 deaths. Texas, 258,658 confirmed cases, with 2,757,859 tested. Total Texas deaths, 3,192. U.S. cases, 3,236,130 total confirmed cases and 134,572 deaths. Find out more online at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC website at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Medical Center Hospital COVID-19 Update. Medical Center Health System has reported its 17th COVID-19-related death Sunday, an MCH press release detailed. The patient, a 90-year-old male from Odessa, was admitted from home to Medical Center Hospital on July 7th and died Sunday afternoon. The patient had pre-existing conditions and the family has been notified, according to Medical Center Hospital. Medical Center Hospital had previously reported on two deaths that occurred Saturday afternoon. The first patient was a 96-year-old male that was admitted from home to Medical Center on June 30th and died Saturday afternoon. The second patient was a 41-year-old female who was admitted July 4th and passed away shortly after the previous patient. Both patients are from Odessa and had pre-existing conditions. The families have also been notified. Medical Center Hospital currently has 47 COVID-19 positive patients in-house. The critical care units have 11 COVID patients with 6 on ventilators. The critical care overflow has 5 patients with all 5 on ventilators. The remaining 31 patients are on the COVID isolation floors, 7 Central and 8 Central.
Odessa American Death Notice, published Monday, July 13, 2020. Hortensia C. Sanchez. Hortensia C. Sanchez, 93 of Odessa, died Thursday, July 9 in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated at 10 a.m. Wednesday, July 15 at St. Anthony's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Ector County Cemetery, the Los Angeles section. Father Tony Franco is officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Published Saturday, July 11, 2020, from the Odessa American. Daily Enema Fad Precautions. Dear Dr. Roach, what do you think of the enema fad? I've heard of people who take daily enemas. Some even go to the doctor for a higher-up irrigation. To me, this is weird and I would think not healthy. Answer. Enemas are neither necessary nor recommended for everyday use and should be used only for constipation after several days' worth of no bowel movement, when other safer treatments have been ineffective. In this case, enemas can prevent impaction. Enemas, if used, should be warm water rather than with soap, which can damage the lining of the colon. Some people, such as those who are bedridden with chronic illness, may need enemas on a regular basis, but this is uncommon and only to be done under doctor's orders. I was unaware there was a fad. Friend lets woman take the fall for her divorce. Dear Abby, for Monday, July 13th. Dear Abby, Darlene and I have been friends for 40 years. She moved to Arizona with me in the 80s from Michigan. Her boyfriend drove out and convinced her to return to Michigan and get married, which she did. But she's always hated Michigan. She raised 2 girls. I was always called aunt and was considered close. Years passed and the marriage was struggling. I invited Darlene to come and visit to get away for a bit. She fell right back in love with Arizona. She expressed her unhappiness in the marriage, and I told her that if she ever needed a place to stay, she could live with me. She came out for another visit, found a job, and decided to stay. Her girls, now in their early 20s, were shocked and hurt by their mom's decision to divorce their father. One of them blames me, blocked me on Facebook, and no longer talks to me. It has been 3 years, and when Darlene's daughter comes to visit, I have to stay away. Darlene refuses to talk to the daughter to smooth things out between us. I think she should do something to defend me. Am I wrong? Wrongly blamed in the West. Dear wrongly blamed, no, you are not wrong. You did Darlene a favor by welcoming her to Arizona, but you were not responsible for her divorce. It appears no good deed goes unpunished. She should not be letting you take the heat for the fact she left her husband. Darlene should have explained to her daughter the marriage was an unhappy one for a long time, and regardless of where she chose to live afterward, it wouldn't have been near their father. Darlene and her daughter owe you an apology. Because you are required to stay away when daughter visits, perhaps it would be better if Darlene found another place to live rather than your home. Dear Abby, during my sister's pregnancy, she made very clear that the only people she wanted to transport her child would be her, her husband, and our mother. I disagreed, but because of her pregnancy, I kept silent and abided by her wish that I not purchase my own car seat in the event of an emergency. I don't have any children of my own. Now that the child is in daycare, I found out through a third party that my sister has listed me as an emergency contact. The first question that came to mind was, why? But all I could do was acknowledge the information. Would it be out of line for me to ask her about this, and if she confirms it, to remove my info from her emergency contact? Or should I just hope that I never get called? I don't want to be unprepared, but I know that emergencies do happen. Taken aback in the East. Dear taken aback, emergencies do happen. Lives can be changed in only a moment. Before listing you as an emergency contact, your sister should have asked for permission and discussed it with you. It would not be out of line to tell her you have just been informed about it and ask why she did it without telling you. While you're at it, ask if the child has any medical conditions you're not aware of and exactly what she wants done in an emergency situation. If you decide to follow through with this, you should know the name of her doctor, what, if any, medications the child is taking, and what hospital the ambulance should deliver the kid to if it becomes necessary, since you don't have a child seat in your vehicle and don't want to risk being cited should you be stopped on the way.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. A baby born today has a sun in Aries and a moon in Gemini. Happy birthday for Monday, March 30, 2020. This year, new financial opportunities are headed your way, and you can solidify that foundation you've been dreaming about. Be on your toes and be ready to seize the opportunity as soon as it occurs. You can expect sudden and emotional reactions to matters in your personal life. If single, you meet a fun and funny Gemini who delights you but is not ready to commit. If attached, you rediscover all the camaraderie that brought you together in the first place. Libra delights you. Aries, March 21 through April 19, 4 stars. It's a time of completion. You're in a good position to act on your wishes and dreams. You reap what you've sown, and you benefit from your association with a group. Friends play an important role in your day. Tonight, look ahead to your next goal. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 5 stars. Think abundance. Finish what you started at work. Visualize the future and look beyond the immediate. Clear up odds and ends. Take an inventory on where things are going in your life. It's a great time for self-promotion. Tonight, online shopping finds you a treasure. Gemini, May 21 through June 20, 4 stars. You are busy moving about from place to place, handling chores and thinking about work matters. Your mental abilities are strong now, and you have an emotional need to reinvigorate your studies. A short trip works to your benefit. Tonight, go out with friends. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 3 stars. Unconscious attitudes at work can be difficult, and you tend to keep your feelings secret now. Relations with women can be hard. It's a great day for a mystical or spiritual discipline. Your intuition is heightened. Tonight, Journal your most intimate thoughts. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 3 stars. A change of scenery would do you good today. You might be involved in a community activity or humanitarian benefit. You see two sides of an issue. You're feeling creative and have a need to express yourself in writing. Tonight, early bedtime. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 3 stars. Your organizational skills are highlighted. Hard work is called for today to complete a project. Stay focused and avoid any inclinations to wander off to other tasks. Be methodical and thorough. Romance takes a back seat for now. Tonight, take the night off. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 5 stars. Your creativity, personal grace, and magnetism are highlighted. Work finds you soaring high with emotion. It's also a good day to take a chance or experiment. Pleasure and fun are emphasized. Express your joy. Tonight, contact an old friend you haven't talked to in a while. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 4 stars. Your experiences are more emotionally intense. You could be dealing with a matter concerning shared resources or possessions. Security is an important issue with you today. Control your impulses for the time being. Emphasize quality over quantity. Tonight, indulge in a luxurious bath. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 3 stars. You want to spend time with creative, witty, and well-spoken people. You feel a need to communicate with great intelligence. You get along with others and can resolve any disagreements. Just don't get into an argument with an Aries today. Tonight, date night. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 3 stars. It's a service-oriented day. You offer advice and support to those around you. Do a good deed for someone. Be sympathetic and tolerant. Diplomacy wins the way. An adjustment in your domestic life may be necessary. Tonight, special dinner with family. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 4 stars. It's your day to play it your way. You attract financial success, especially if you are open to a new approach. Be the person you always imagined you might be. Play with different personas. You're playing with power, so be careful not to hurt others. Tonight, relax. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 4 stars. It's a day for hard work that will make the rest of the week go easier. You have an emotional reaction concerning your home or parents. You're dealing with the foundations of who you are and who you are becoming. Tonight, treat your sweetie. Born today, artist Vincent van Gogh, 1853, singer Eric Clapton, 1945, actor Paul Reiser, 1957.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.